Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Waterski Pro Tour podcast. This is Matteo Luzzeri, and today I'm joined by my co-host Trent Fielenson. Hi, Trent.
Matteo. So, stop number two of the 2024 season, the first slalom event of the year, and just for, you know, for a handful of reasons, this event, namely the Swiss Pro Slalom event, 10 years in the making. And even, you know, even when this was just an upstart event with, you know, relatively little prize money and when they were just kind of getting their feet wet, this event has always held a special place. And like there's always drama. There's always, it's always interesting to, you know, to say the least. And it's funny, like it's early in the season, but it's definitely one of the skiers' favorite events.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's for most of the skiers there, it's a quick drive, right? It's in the middle of central Orlando, in one of the most beautiful ski lakes in the world. Normally, boats are always on point, and Clint is very good at getting the best and most respected drivers around. So the fundamentals for a great slalom event have always been there from, you know, year one. Also, I think it's really good that Clint mentioned how this was not his first gig, because prior to moving to the United States, he organized the Alizé Cup for 9 years. So this is like one of the most experienced pro tournament organizers putting up a great event in one of the best sites in the world. So since the beginning, this has always had a special stature, regardless of, you know, the cash prize or the system that the tournament was, involved with.
Yeah, because when you have that, you know, for skiers by skiers feel, and it is a legitimate claim. I know the skiers are always super appreciative, and like you said, because of the nature of that lake, the skiing is always through the roof.
Yeah, and you know what I love about it is also how in the last 2 years, this has come after the Swiss Pro Tricks, which we published a recap of a couple of weeks ago. And it almost, I don't want to say that the trick event is a build up to the slalom event, because it's not. But, you know, in a way, people watching the webcast, they've already seen that dock, they've already seen the lake. Yeah, and now it's slalom, which, you know, there's a little bit more amateur, passionate people than slalom, and they're looking forward to it. So this year, there was a lot of anticipation for this event. 10th edition, you know, especially let's start with the women, if you don't mind, you know.
Let's jump in. Up
until Saturday, there have been 9 editions of the Swiss Pro Slalom, and one woman won all 9 of them. So, you know, Regina being Regina. So like everyone was thinking, okay, is Regina going to go 10 for 10, 10 out of 10, right?
For sure. And you almost had to assume, you know,
yes,
for as good as, you know, for as tight as that race has gotten in the last 3 years, you had to assume. And that's like, that gets, you get so used to Regina being so good. And for as, you know, obviously Jamie winning back-to-back world titles and Whitney, you know, winning, you know, all the Moombas. And you for as tight as that race has gotten, I think you fail to appreciate like the level of dominance that Regina's had. I mean, to win an event 9 years in a row and an event that is, you know, heavily attended, everyone goes, an event that, you know, there's no wild cards. It's on a perfect lake, perfect driving, almost always perfect conditions. That, you know, I had to hear it 2 or 3 times and, you know, had to kind of do a little recollection of my own to, you know, confirm, yeah, it's true. Like, yes, man, not, you know, I knew she had never lost it, but in my mind, I was like, yeah, well, this is probably year 4, 5, 6, maybe. Like, holy crap, man, 9 years in a row is insane.
Yes, it is. It really is. And not without drama. I recall very vividly a runoff with Whitney 1 year for the win.
Yeah.
They might have even gone to 2, like, sort of like runoff followed by runoff. Like, and yet it's even more credit to her dominance on that lake at this time of the year, because Swiss Pro Slalom is generally early May, except for our, the COVID year, which it happened in October. But, you know, she won that too. So, you know, like at the end of the day, like she has been dominating this event.
Okay, so that's Matteo. That's a great place to start, right? I mean, we'll cover the details of the finals and who ended up where. But if you're going to go, you know, this year, drama is not the right word, but this year was filled with surprises and exciting sort of turns. So like that's the perfect one to start with. What so you know, Regina actually missing 38 off in round one of the prelims, which was, you know, all like the, just the first head scratcher.
Right.
You know, because while she either skis great or really great, you know, to see her have a very human round was shocking. And then ultimately for her to end up, you know, in fourth place off the podium. But I guess, so the first thing then is, you know, a human, but B, does that hold any water? Does it hold any water? Does that change what everyone is anticipating for the entire season as it relates to professional women's slalom skiing? What does that mean that she got fourth place to you?
To be honest, not much, because again, you know, like you look at Mumba, she went to Mumba, she won her first Mumba ever. So, you know, Regina is not going anywhere, you know.
I agree. It doesn't mean anything other than, okay, but I think we can kind of, you know, she had an uncharacteristically terrible round one. And in the finals, she actually looked great. Like this, you know, and I know anyone that watched, you know, but the strangest thing happened, you know, she came out of two ball and miss grip wouldn't be even a fair enough assessment. Like her arm didn't go through the handle, but her hand went through the handle and she actually gripped from two to three ball. And you can just kind of picture this in your mind. Like her whole hand was through the handle and she kind of just rolled. She wrote, like, put her wrist at a 90 degree angle, if you will, her left wrist. Yep. And she actually was holding it below the palm of her hand.
And I've had that happening too.
Me too.
I think California Pro-Am. And it's the scariest thing because you're like, okay, is the strap of my glove going to hold this handle on my onside pull? Like, nuts, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because I've had it one time in my life too. And it was at a pro event in California. And I was surprised how much power I actually still had when I relaxed my arms and I could trust that. But then it was as surprising coming into the turn, trying to like wiggle my hand back onto the handle it's virtually impossible. So, you know, that I feel like she found her stride through the weekend and she was looking very good, in the final. I think it was more of a freak thing than anything.
Yeah, probably so. And, you know, like as she said, like, because again, to give context, after the round one, she skied round two among the very first skiers on the dock, having to qualify herself for the final. So she had, you know, a situation which she probably hasn't had in a decade or more. Like, okay, what's the cut for the final? Right. I got to make that score. Otherwise, I don't get to ski this evening. You know, like, she said it like in the interview, like, hey, this is new, but it was kind of exciting. And she posted a 1:41 with that sort of like new situation. So I don't think Regina is going anywhere. I do think is that the other skiers are pushing, right? So you have someone like Whitney who, you know, had a 3 and a 5, ended up didn't ski round two, but then ended up second with a 5:39. Yes. Ali Nicholson, who didn't have, like, let's say, she didn't post the scores that she was posting, let's say, middle of the season last year. Yep. But she did the typical Ali Nicholson thing that every round is better than the one before.
Awesome.
You know, and then she ended up with 3:39 in the final, got third. And then, of course, the story of the weekend and in the... I would say in general, is Jamie Bull, who has been, you know, getting out of the mountains like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, however long it was.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks. And then, you know, a little 3:39 round one, and then 1:41 round two, 1:41 round three. And the thing that shocked me in the final was exactly as Freddie was saying in the commentary. Like, she didn't have the best start, but she was skiing the pass, kind of getting a little down course every buoy. And she was last off the dock, knowing that Whitney had five. So the way she got out of four, I think 95% of, you know, informed water skiers watching the final thought, okay, she got the five. She's going to, you know, get a turn out of it somehow, and we're going to see a runoff. And she hammered five ball with all her might, you know, and brought it home.
Yeah, it was. I went back and I've watched it three or four times, and it was that. It was kind of a messy start that was going to leave her on a somewhat shallow line. But then she skied the pass two and three. She skied the pass she skied her line, if you will. Like, it wasn't a continual bleed. But then yes, like, you know, to wheelie four ball like that, it was. I mean, it's a move of someone with a lot of confidence, you know, it's a move, right. I think you're right. I think of the entire field that weekend, I bet you men and women, only 3-4 people max would have attempted to turn that buoy, you know?
Oh, for sure.
I think the vast majority of the pro field would have tried their luck at a runoff, you know, better to be safe than sorry. But I'm thinking, like, you know, I can think of a small handful of people that certainly would have attempted to try and make that turn and win it right then and there, but it would have been the minority. It was impressive.
Oh, for sure. I was well shocked when I saw her just like throwing herself into that five and making the statement of no, I'm winning this now.
Who else would have done that, do you think? Who else would have done it?
Yeah, so I would say Will this weekend would have done it, because Will gets into those faces that, you know, no matter how he gets to three ball, he's going to find a way to get out of it at 41. Mm-hmm. Joel would do it, because, you know, even though Joel this weekend showed a bit of like professional slalom skiing refraining, I think it was second round, he just zigzagged two ball going like, okay, I just need to be in the final. Let's make the final first. Very atypical, but he would be the other person that comes to mind. Those are the two names at the moment, you know?
It was definitely one of the highlights of the weekend for sure. Like like her win aside, it was just like to watch her be that confident and that, you know, what else do I have to lose kind of mentality. It was kind of cool.
Yeah. And so and then the other interesting thing was into the final, she had a one, and Regina also had a one. And as you know, in the Water Ski Pro Tour, you get two extra points for the highest score. And they made a great point in the commentary by saying, last year, that's how much it took for Jamie to win the tour. Like, she won the whole tour by 2 points, you know, which is insane. Yeah. That's how tight the women's standings were last year. So, you know, I think Jamie went in to try and turn one, and then, you know, not the best gate, kind of got pouched forward, and it was one. But very fun tournament to watch in the women. Other thing I would say is, man, I really hope Paige like works on her 39s, because like super consistent the whole day. 11s looked like either a walk in the park or with problems, but there was no question in anybody's mind that she was going to run it. It seems like now it's time for Paige to figure out whatever Ali Nicholson figured out last year or 2 years ago. That's sort of like extra daring mode at 39 to try anyway, you know?
And the amount that she's improved in the last 2 years is it's unreal. And I know that, and that's kind of where the progression goes. You start taking those steps in practice, which she has, like, you know, her level of confidence at 39 in practice, from what I've been told, is really starting to climb last year into this year. So it'll kind of goes like that. It'll bleed into the tournament scenes also. You know, seems like once it happens once, then there's just like a different level of calm, you know, at your hardest pass, whatever it might be.
Yeah. So that leaves us with the podium of the Swiss Pro Slalom in the Pro Women, with Jamie Bull winning with 1:41 off, or 10:25, followed by Whitney McLean-Tocrini with 5:10:75, or 39.5 off. And then in third place, Ali Nicholson with 3:10:75, or 39 off. Let's switch to the pro men. Now, you tell me the trends that you saw. Like, what, because I think there's a lot of storylines in this final, but like, or in this tournament for the men. But so you tell what jumped at you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just started off with, you know, like where that, you know, and we've been saying it for the last couple of years, where that, you know, where people pile up in men's slalom right now. And it's that 3:41. And it was, you know, after round one, I mean, it was deep. I mean, it was from second place all the way down to what? Eighth place, perhaps, all 3:41.
I think it was all the way to ninth. I think by round one, people knew, okay, three is going to be needing a very strong backup score.
So there it is. Right. So, you know, the top 10 skiers were all at 3:41 or slightly better. Will Asher, you know, who was I guess round of four in the first round, but I guess, if you just jump right off, that's it. It's the depth of the field, you know, and those 3:41s were, you know, everyone from, Stephen Nevue through to like a Charlie Ross. So like bookends of the experience level. You put, I believe Lucas Cornell had a three. So like there was just a broad range of experience levels.
And what a three, Trent. What a three. Because I was working in the board at ski school and then someone told me, oh, Lucas did three, you know. And I don't know. I hold a special place for him because we invited him to the Junior Challenge 2 years ago. Yeah. It was kind of like, seemed like it was his first time abroad. And you could tell he was a shredder from first gate of first pass of first practice ride. And I'm like, okay, wow, 3:41. I know he skied it 2 or 3 weeks prior in Australia. That's great. And then I watched the replay. He pulled to four. Like, this is a right foot forward, 18-year-old that got to three with some space and turned it and tried to get a piece of four, which is very Australian of him. And very, you know, very determined, like, you know how it is, you know, like first few tournaments of your pro career, you just go all out and see what happens. And he did, he really did. So yeah, by the end of round one, you had the young and the not so young all stacked at three with Will at four. And I think he really brings back it's cool to see the trend that we saw last year where 3:41 was the cut. And you needed a super solid backup score coming back on the first tournament of the Pro Tour this year. Three was the cut, and you needed a solid backup to make it. And turned out that that backup was two. So it was one. It was two all the way until Nate. And then Nate needed a one to make it through because we had Lucas and Freddie Winter with a backup score of a half.
Yeah.
So Nate was the one before last of the dock, but certainly the last of the dock, they still had to get a backup score to qualify because Will had that four. And uncharacteristically of him, just kind of stopped at one, right?
Yeah.
They got to one ball and stopped.
Yeah. And I think like, so there's, you know, so there is absolutely from people watching that event, there's the second storyline. And it's similar to, you know, to the women's side in that the person that you would, if you had to pick an easy bet coming into that tournament, you'd be like, well, you know, if I have to put my money down, you know, it's probably going to be on Nate, you know, it'd be hard not to. And similarly, you know, to where Regina ultimately ended up, Nate, you know, finished up the event in fifth place. So, and then it's kind of the same question. What does it mean? You know, and following suit, you know, it means nothing.
Right.
This season's going to play out like normal. And B, it also indicates a small life shift for Nate. You know, it actually, he, in his pursuit of, you know, his commercial airline pilot's license. He has taken on a position with a commercial airline, and he's got obligations that spread out wider than he has had in the past. So this really was a case of him working more, skiing less this early in the season.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I mean, I don't recall an event jumping ahead into the final where Nate Smith is first off the dock. You know, like as he said on the microphone, like that shouldn't matter. I know what I can do. I go out and do it. But it is a different spot to start first off the dock or start even like fourth of the dock. You know, like and certainly and you know starting last is another one.
Yeah, and you know what else it might be too, which was kind of nice to see. I feel like he's been so good for so long, and he more than anyone, people love to chalk it up to, oh, that's just Nate being Nate. Nate's just that good. I think this shines light on the fact that while incredibly talented, he's obviously been working his butt off his entire career also, because, you know, the first event that he was underprepared was the first event that he looked, you know, more human. You know, I think people love to chalk up wild success to just innate ability. They don't, you know, they forget that he, like everyone else, has been dedicated to his craft and worked his butt off.
No, for sure. It's a good testament of the value of, you know, training and dedication. And also of how hard it is, right? Because, yes, you to a certain extent, it benefits from the years of, you know, hard training and dedication, but you also have to find the time to get your reps in order to, you know, perform to your level. And it sounds like, Nate hasn't been able to get those reps. But here's the scenario, right? Just as a reminder for those who watched, Nate was first out of the dock. That's two at 41. So all of a sudden, the field is open with seven more skiers to go. Only one of these skiers has won a pro slalom event in his career, and it's Will Usher, who's going to be last of the dock. The other six skiers...
Of the skiers to follow Nate, you mean, right?
Correct. Yeah. So then... Looks like the door is open. There's seven to go. Six have never won a pro tournament. And the one that has only won the Swiss Pro Slalom once, right? Okay, so what's going to happen? Now, you add on to it that since 2019, Botas Ski Pro-Am, every other pro tournament has been won by the Magic Four, right? So Will, Tigas, Nate, and Freddie.
Yep.
Nobody else has won a pro event other than these four since, you know, June 2019.
In 5 years, yeah.
So then we're like, okay, maybe there's a new winner, you know? that was the storyline, I think, in my estimation throughout the...
That was the storyline, right? So, you know, you've got these skiers to follow. You know, you've got Charlie Ross you know, you've got
Rob
Joel Poland coming out. You've got Rob Hazelwood coming out. All these people hungry for a win, right? And it was like that was the narrative coming from the commentary booth, and that was it was definitely a thought trickling around. And I feel like the more that thought was being voiced, the more that narrative was being sort of nudged and told as the skiers left the dock, the more I know that
Will Usher was listening.
and I'm like, you know, he and I have been close friends since we were kids, and you know, the whole deal, trained together, lived together, and the whole time, every time someone from the commentator's booth mentioned it, it made me smile, because I'm like, there's not a chance this is happening today. And obviously I look smart now because it's pro slalom. Anything can happen. But in my heart, my mind, I'm like, there's not a chance that anyone's winning this except Will today. You know,
especially the way Will looked throughout the day. Right.
Oh my gosh.
That one round one looked easy. And I think you and I spoke about this off record, but like the event looked like it was very easy to ski for some and unusually hard to ski for the others. Like, who knows what the reason might be? Lack of time on the water, wind changing maybe ever so slightly, which you, it's hard to see from the water at Swiss because it's so well protected by the trees. But Will made it look like it was easy on Sunday, you know?
He certainly did.
And both in the
and
round
to watch
one.
Him too, and to watch him too, like you just had this feeling that it wouldn't have mattered what score was going to be put out ahead of him. Like he was going to, whatever it took, he was going to, you know, like, and to watch the way he laced up that 41, you know, knowing he only needed 3.5. If he needed 6, he would have ran 6. Like, that's just how he looked. That's how he looked in the first round. And that's how he looked on every movement in the final. It was just one of those things where anyway, without going all the way into it, he was going to stay out of his own way. He was just going to do what it was going to take, you know. And it was one of those beautiful to watch moments. I loved it.
Yeah. And then just to, you know, to give credit to everybody else, I think, you know, sure. I can't remember the exact order, but I believe that Cole went out and missed 39. Mm-hmm. Then you had Charlie with a 2. Right, so he tied Nate.
Corey Vaughn was in the final also, right?
So Corey was in the final. I think so he went a little later and then missed 39.
Yeah,
and then good credit to Jamie Calhoun because he got to that 2 ball with the fire of someone that wanted to get out of it. Unfortunately, didn't happen. 1.5, but he was going for it. And you know, Jamie, for being so young, he's already had a number of Swiss Pro Slalom finals. So, you know, I think even more so justified, you know, even more so justified to just attack. So in my book, kudos to him. And then we get Joel Poland, who does a 3, right? Does a 3.
So there was a lot of threes all weekend, like we've mentioned, but that 3 of Joel's in the final, I know when he looks at replays now, he's going to be kicking himself because for as good as 1 was, his 2 was better. And for as good as his 2 was, his 3 was completely manageable. I know how he ended up inside 4 ball, but looking back on it, he's going to be, how the heck did I ever end up inside 4 ball? It was insanely good skiing.
Oh, definitely. And then, you know, Rob,
His tournament.
This is his tournament, right? Like, it was his breakthrough tournament. It's the tournament where he does well early in the season, and he was in a position to create damage, you know, like second last of the dock. Ended up tying Joel, but obviously with a superior backup score. So, of course, there's the question of, okay, if Will does 3, we're all going to get together and dance for a runoff. And that didn't happen. But, like, if he doesn't, you know, I'm still second instead of third, which is a good difference in points, a good difference in money. Like, I think second is his highest placement at a pro tournament and quite the stacked pro tournament as the Swiss Pro Slalom is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And he was another guy too that, you know, he was in a spot to get further down the course also. You know what I mean? It wasn't a layup at 3 ball. He looked great all weekend. And it was just that. It was, you know, it was one of the more, you know, it was exhilarating to watch because it just the story of, you know, Rob being, you know, Will's little cousin and Joel, you know, who broke out at the World Championships last year and just proved that wasn't one moment in time. Like, it was the dichotomy of these two young buddies who, you know, like, almost with the sense of, what the heck are we doing, you know, challenging for the win here on a pro slalom Sunday, and the dichotomy of that with the old guard, with, you know, 41-year-old Will Asher, and he said, you know, like I don't know what I'm doing here, I'm an old man. So if this is how we're starting the pro slalom tour, man, I cannot wait.
Oh, neither can I. This was A lot of jam-packed one-day, two rounds plus final event with a lot of storylines and a lot of really exceptional skiing, which led to a fully British podium in the men's slalom with Will Asher in first place with 3.5 at 10-2 or 41 off, followed by his cousin Robert Hazelwood with 3 at 41 and Joe Poland in third with 3 at 41 also. Next event, Trent, is Lake 38 in about a month's time, a little less. So yep. I'm sure we'll be watching and chatting about it soon. But until then, enjoy your time on the water.